Hello guys, welcome to the Emerging Tech Africa podcast. My name is Bolu and on today's episode, we'll be talking to Clement Ugbo. He's the CEO and co-founder of Web3D and Gravitel. He'll be taking us through his journey becoming a Web3 designer and what it takes to earn big bucks as a Web3 designer. Enjoy.
So my career actually started as a title I used to work with, which was media archiving. And basically, that was like a department that I started in an organization from scratch, and it was focused on kind of like, archiving all of the data that the company had at the time, and basically cloud usage and stuff wasn't even kind of like really prominent at the time, so it was more of like having an in-house server, and then we can just basically create a lot of like, you know, data structure and organization, and then archive it in those server. Then I moved into training as an SAP consultant, which was basically on GRC and access control and process control. So my career in design, it started in that was in 2018 when I started getting involved with cryptocurrency basically, and then to just like passive trading. And I just loved the fact that at the time I could basically just send funds to anybody anywhere. But I got fascinated with the technology because obviously even to this moment, one of the challenges that we are still facing in Nigeria or even in Africa is cross-border transfers of funds and anything that has to do with monetary value. So what fascinated me then was the fact that I really didn't have to go through the rigorous banking processes or challenges just to get funds across to anybody at the time. And I just wanted to get to a point where I was part of the solution bringer of this particular technology. And in my own thought then, I just thought like design would be one of the best place to start. But prior to that, I actually started learning engineering, which was more focused in front end. And then I started doing a couple of jobs that revolved around cryptocurrency. And as a matter of fact, there was one in Nigeria, which a lot of people might be aware of, which was Blockchain Tech Hub and Sato Wallet. Although a couple of things happened with management then, but I was literally the lead designer and front-end engineer at the time that literally kind of like made that project look more like a non-Nigerian company, because I kind of like revamped the entire design and stuff. But basically that's where my career in design for blockchain started. And then I moved into working with a DAO where I was the media director at the time. And then I started getting like jobs, and most of the jobs were based off on recommendations, some persons that I've worked with in the past. And most times I just get messages on Twitter and LinkedIn, and in most cases they're like, hey, this guy recommended you and stuff like that. So I didn't have to like create like a portfolio for myself or to kind of like create something that showcases my work, but I had all of these jobs from them. So basically that's in the span of like four years, that's how my career in designer started. And what I can say that really fascinated me was definitely the technology and how it was really easy to do cross-border transfer of funds, and also the many solutions that blockchain brings to most of the challenges that we face in Africa as well. So I needed to be part of the people that are really contributing to that solution, and that's one of the reasons why I started doing design in blockchain. Like, I mean, this is just a summary. If I begin to kind of like even give like details of how I started and how I started working before I got finally into design, it's going to be a long story. But one thing that I've always known, right, was that I was always very keen on detail. And even when I kind of like work on documentations, I always want a case where everything looks more like a UX. Like, you basically, when you start from the beginning of the document to the end, it feels more like a story, and you just want to relate with that particular story. So it's a whole lot of story to talk about, but my journey definitely didn't start as a designer really. I was part of like the an SAP team. SAP is basically an ERP solution, enterprise resource planning solution, and it's fully on technology, right? And at the time I was working with some of my senior colleagues, and we had jobs where we took on projects for NNPC in Abuja as well as Dangote here in Lagos. So most of it were obviously remote, but I was helping some of the senior colleagues to basically create a structure for accesses and also for risk management part of their projects. So with that, I mean, if you do SAP, you realize that there's a whole lot of, like, especially when you're doing access control side of things, there are a lot of focus you put into detail, because you obviously do not want to create maybe an account or create an access for somebody who is probably, maybe imagine giving like a star access to somebody who is probably like a junior team member for a company like Dangote or a company like NNPC. What happens in such situations is that, I mean, somebody is not experienced. He can just go press a button and then something just goes wrong in the entire organization. So we're really keen on like details, and that kind of like support an action, or I would say like a love for design, because at the time I was kind of like switching between design as well as SAP, and I was the one kind of like, you know, taking care of like most of the design work, because obviously I was learning at the time. So at the that period when I started moving into like started learning more about cryptocurrency and stuff like that, I realized that, well, design is obviously something that I definitely want to kind of like put my attention into, because SAP was good. It was obviously a lucrative job, but at that time, I just felt like what really spoiled my reactions or my love for anything was, you know, anything has to be design. So I would say working with the team at the time, you know, working on SAP and all of that stuff, really was one of the reasons why I went into design. And then, of course, like I mentioned before, I just love the technology about on blockchain. I love the fascinating challenges it brings, as well as the solution, the end result that it brings to users. So that just made it easy for me to just transition into design completely. So most of my learning process have been self-taught. As a matter of fact, I think I only actually started paying for a couple of resources and paying for really high-end lectures and tutorials when I actually started making money off design, right? Especially when I started doing a couple of jobs for blockchain projects. At least then it was now enough for me to say, oh, I have this money, I can now pay for a course. But during my early period when I was learning design, it started off as creating videos, right? So I had this love for creating animations, right? And based on where I worked before, which was more in ministry, I would say one of the key things that I was doing then was obviously video recording and, you know, editing. At the time, what I just did when I wanted to kind of like move into design was I checked a lot of courses on YouTube, and many of them were basically things that helped me to understand first the principles and basics of design. Obviously earlier when I started, I didn't bother checking about what principles or basics of designs were. I just wanted to just design something, and most times what I do is just go on YouTube, check out what this guy is doing and try to replicate what he has done, right? And when I'm done, I look at it, okay, what exactly did he do well that I did not do well? And moving forward, I just basically started doing that. I started learning from a couple of other designers on YouTube, and then eventually, I think a year later, when I started earning some money, what I did was I started kind of like buying courses. Like, I have a lot of courses right now. Like, most times I actually even do go back to them again, because sometimes the getting to work with most of the early tutorials that you use in growing up, I don't think you can outgrow them, because there are some really key, even though some of them might be outdated, there are some key stuff that they would probably talk about that resonates well with your emotion, especially when you started your journey. So when you learn them from, you go back to kind of like check what you learned earlier before, it helps you to even get better understanding of some things that you probably missed before. So yeah, I used YouTube, and then I moved into Udemy, I moved into Freecodecamp, and then Domestika, and a couple of other platforms out there that are really, really, really good. And then there's also Blender, which is more of like a 3D community of design. I was literally using some ideas and some tutorials in Blender to understand how to work with another 3D animation platform, Maya. So all of these platforms and communities really helped my journey, you know, really kind of becoming a better designer and understand how to solve problems using design. Yeah. So I would like to say I'm a design generalist, but I always see myself as someone who is very, very open to learn. And Why I say that is because when I see a lot of people say they are generalists, I mean, it depends, right? You could be a generalist, but at the same time, because of the ever-changing processes of technology, right? It's hard for one to say that I know everything about design, right? Because the moment you kind of like, you know, you've been able to figure out one thing about it is that when you understand the basics and the principles, obviously there are probably no design that comes to play that you won't be able to tackle. But the fact that there are new technology just keep, you know, springing up every single day, it makes it a bit I would say that there are all these new things that would come up that might probably differ from something that you've learned before. So how I things that I used to do, designs that I used to do before, prior from my early days even till now, are it spans across video editing, motion graphics, visual design. I'm more into product designing now, which is obviously what you mentioned, UI UX. I'm more into that now, but I do 3D. I also do 3D modeling. I'm not into the animation side, but I do 3D modeling as well and texturing. And then I also work on. I do literally every design, depending on which one comes to my plate. But most of the tools that I use more often, obviously the Adobe Suite, Creative Suite, which is After Effects, Photoshop, Adobe XD. I used to use the Adobe XD until Figma came, but Figma just took everything. But now that Figma is now part of the Adobe Creative Suite, that makes it even more interesting because I've been waiting. I've actually been waiting for that combination for a very long time because I worked with Adobe XD, but I wouldn't lie about it. I wasn't really kind of like fluent with it because it wasn't a Figma, right? And when I started using Figma, it's in so many ways it kind of like resonated with what I wanted to, you know, the kind of tools that I wanted to use to, you know, to work on products and stuff like that. So having it on the Adobe Creative Suite now is actually just amazing because almost all of the design tools that I use are, you know, are all into Adobe Creative Suite, right? Apart from maybe Blender and Autodesk Maya, right? But all of these are the tools that I use, and it cuts across, you know, video editing, motion graphics, 3D design, visual design, and most importantly, product designing. Fun fact, just a quick fun fact. I don't know if you know Web3 Bridge, right? Web3 Bridge used to be 500 Nigeria devs for Earth. That was during my early time when I was working on products, like on front-end engineering as well as design. I was literally the technical person working. Myself and Ayo built out like 500 Nigeria devs for ETH. And then I built out the entire infrastructure for the first court and the second court. And then that's when we now got Crivital, and then we started working on Crivital then. But the thing, the fun fact about it was that all of the designs, all of the front-end engineering, the back-end, all of every single thing that revolved around the first and second court of 500 Nigerian devs with, which is now Web3 Bridge, I built all of those infrastructures. And it was just only me at the time because there was a single person. But most of all the things that I've learned from the design tutorials and a couple of engineering stuff was one of the key things that really helped me to build. And it's actually one of my proudest projects, to be honest, because I mean, I've seen a couple of like projects that I work with where for every 100, maybe for every 10 persons that applied for a job in those companies, there's a likely chance that 7 to 8 of them are from Web3 Bridge, Web3 Bridge alumni. So seeing that it makes me really excited that at least you know, I was part of like the team that, you know, made that stuff possible. So basically, we've literally helped a lot of people get blockchain jobs as well.
Wow, that's really amazing. So what would you say, because I think now it's more, most people, it's interesting the way you started, but most people might not have the, most people might not start out that way. Most people just want to get in and focus on a particular area. Would you say it's necessary to be a generalist or just focus on a particular side?
So, I mean, I think that's an excellent question because I've had to discuss this with a lot of mentees. Like, and one of the things I tell them is that you can be anything. You can literally learn a lot of things at once. But the choice you make actually, it's basically one thing that affects your the present place where you are and also your future, because you might not know that your choices you are making right now might be something that impedes growth as you begin to progress. Why I'm saying this is, I think it's okay to be a generalist, but be a generalist on something that revolves around a particular niche, right? Or revolves around a particular technology. For example, I'm a designer. I don't see why I would probably want to start doing stuff that has to do with like maybe cybersecurity. Yes, I did cybersecurity with SAP then, but when I found out that cybersecurity stuff, yes, I loved it, but it wasn't really kind of like giving me this excitement when I'm either designing or working with a team of designers. I realized that design was obviously something that I need to go into. So things that I focus on has to be something, it has to be related to design stuff. So if I want to do anything, it will probably be designing on After Effects or Premiere Pro or Photoshop or Figma, right? I don't see myself leaving that to go and do something that has to do with working on cybersecurity stuff or working on maybe fashion and stuff like that. So I'm saying this because we had a couple of weeks ago we had a Twitter space where someone asked the same question, and she's a designer, right? And a very good designer at that. And then the question she asked was that she's currently learning backend coding, and she was doing Node.js and Python and all that. And when she was done, and she was like asking that, is it okay for her to do that, because right now the reason why she's doing it is just because she just wants to do it, not because of the fact that she has a passion for it. And one of the responses I gave to her was, it'd be weird if you are a designer and you're doing back-end stuff. What I would advise would be that you should do something related to maybe like a front-end engineering, because as a designer, it means that you can be a product designer, you can be a UI UX designer, and in fact it has a huge relationship and synergy with a front-end engineering part of your career. So what my advice was for her was, rather than doing back-end, I would advise you do front-end engineering, so you can learn JavaScript, HTML, CSS, and all the frameworks like Gatsby.js or React.js or Vue.js, and then you can now complement what you are doing as a front-end engineer with what you are doing as a product designer, which leaves you with the option of saying, I can design my product and at the same time I can implement what I have designed as a front-end engineer. But when you are doing product design, and then you are branching out to become a back-end engineer, there is two worlds apart, right? So I mean, what our advice for people is, be a generalist, but be a generalist around the things, around the niche that you are in. If you're a product designer or you have a keen eye for detail, you are always kind of like looking out for colors, for themes and stuff like that, and you probably want to do something that has to do with engineering, go for front-end engineering. Then if you are the logical person who always like thinking about the math, or you like thinking about like what connects this thing to the other from the back, how does this function works with this function, then you should be looking towards going into back-end engineering and focus on things that revolves around that part. Even cybersecurity can actually be back on the back-end engineering, because as a cybersecurity person, you are more of an admin creating accesses and stuff like that. But just don't do things that are two words apart. So that would be my advice, really.
So for the love design, I want to be in that space front end.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
Yeah. So I think In my own experience, one of the things that I think a whole lot of designers have in one way or the other gone through that same challenge. But earlier, when I started my journey in designing, like I mentioned, Sato Wallet and Blockchain Tech Hub were basically the first project that I worked in. I led a team when I was in Blockchain Tech Hub. I led a team. I was the media director then, and I led a team of about seven designers. So basically, I was one of the senior team members. I was one of the senior team members at Blockchain Tech Hub. But when I tell people how much it is I was receiving then, it's going to be shocking. In fact, some of the mentees and my colleagues, my junior colleagues that I worked with at Blockchain Tech Hub then, when we eventually left the company and then they found out what I was receiving as my pay, it was really shocking for them because there were so many things I was doing as one person. And most times I had to leave designing, I had to leave recording, I had to leave picture taking, I had to leave motion graphics, and then move to the engineering team in that same company to work on the front end side of things, because then they were building SATO Wallet. So I was the one also working on the front end side of the application at the time. So, but then I was receiving barely 50,000 naira. That was my pay. Now, I mean, you should know that even if it was 2018, 2019, if it was 2018, 2019, as a director, right, as the name is called, if you are said to be a director, then you should be expecting at least, even if it was 2018, you should be expecting at least 200,000 naira, at least barest minimum. But then I was paid 50k and I was doing a lot. I was wearing the hats of a lot of senior people that would have been in another organization. And this was not the first time. I have had cases, and all of these things I was doing it based on the fact that I just needed to gain the experience. I want to know, how do you strategically lead a team that would make them comfortable working with you, right? And I wanted to also know, you know, kind of like build my portfolio, get to have design portfolio out there and stuff like that. It was a painful, for me, it was a painful experience, because when Blockchain Tech Hub actually closed, right, it was tough for me to actually even use most of the work that I did there as a portfolio to get more jobs. So it was really restrictive for me, because there were a lot of PROs and a lot of like articles that was talking a lot of really negative stuff about the company, and that was internally because there was some management stuff that happened during that period. It's a story that I almost do not even talk about. The only people that knew about this are just people that are really close to me. But it was painful because I couldn't share my work. I couldn't really put a portfolio. At the time, there was one time when I had an opportunity, a very quick opportunity to have worked earlier with Binance. And because the whole thing that I had, the whole portfolio that I had was based off, a portfolio that, you know, that is revolving around a company that has a bad PR, I couldn't now share it to Binance. Though I was able to now work with Bundle at some point, but I would have gotten that job earlier. That said, there were a lot of other challenges. So working on Web3D, it's a personal mission for me, because I know there are a lot of designers that are really, you know, introverted, really, really introverted. Like, they can't really talk about the amazing things that they are doing because they feel depressed about their work. They feel they are not good enough. And because design, it's a much more subjective career or a subjective expertise that you can have as a person, right? It makes it really tough for somebody to say, hey, I have a good design, I want to show it out there, right? And that's the reason why we built Web3D, because we want to, apart from the fact that yes, it's a company, we obviously would require some revenue to for sustainability, but the goal and the mission here is, how can we really give more access? Now, the access we're talking about is based on, how can we give more financial access to designers? How can we give more network, plus, you know, job networks to designers? How can we connect them to the right people or the right company that will value them for what they really are and the kind of things that they are doing in the space, right? That's the reason why we built Web3D. And the goal for us is, we just want to figure out, build tools, build communities that would really help them to get more access to some of those values and some of those jobs out there, be it financial or be it just having a good network of clients, right? So that's one of the reasons. It's based on personal experience, and I think apart from just being personal experience, there are a lot of designers that are going through some of all these challenges, but of course they can't talk about it because they've not gotten there yet. So we want to try and bridge that gap between those designers and the value that they really get in return.
Let's assume I want to be a designer. I have zero knowledge about designer. I don't even know colors that well. I just think I want to take it to tech.
How would you tell me? First of all, I think anyone can be a designer. That's one thing. That's the first thing I would like to say, because the truth is, if you can identify color, and if you can identify how the look of a particular font is, or you can identify how to position the screen that you're looking at, you can be a designer. Because most of all the basics that you need to know as a designer revolves around some of the regular activities that happens around you. And what I mean by that, we're having a call now. Your screen is probably placed in a way that is comfortable for you to use. That is user experience already. So it means that how do I place the screen such that I'm not strained? I can look at my screen properly and I'm not tired of looking at it. Or how do I place my headset and the person on the other end can hear me and I can also hear the person? All of these things are user experiences, right? User experiences revolves around you as a person first. Before, if you're as a product designer, for example, if you are building something and it doesn't really fit in well to you, obviously it might definitely not fit in well for someone else. Now, this is of course one of the rules, is that as a designer, you are not designing for yourself, you are designing for your end users. But if it really doesn't fit for you, then obviously it won't fit for anybody else. Anyone can be a designer. At the end of the day, it just depends on your zeal. What are you passionate about? It, do you really want to be it? Do you want to be a designer? Do you want to release? Because design is all about problem solving, right? So if, for example, I can use design to solve someone else's problem, or I can use design to solve my own problem, then I can be a designer. So what are the next steps after that? It's simple. You basically need to show that, you know, that interest that you want to learn, because that interest that you want to learn is your next step to understanding how design truly works. Then the next thing is to understanding the basics and the principles of design, right? Which, by the way, you already know some of those things I just listed: positioning, error key, color, typeface. All of these things are all the basics and principles of design. If you already understand all of these things around you, that means you are just a few steps towards understanding how to become a really good designer. And being a designer, that there's one beautiful thing about being a designer is that it revolves around everything. So if you are a visual designer, you are a motion graphic designer, you are a product designer, you're a 3D designer, all of these designs that you, they are all different aspects of designs, but a lot of them still work with same principles and same basics. Other than the fact that, okay, motion design, they have other like rules, because obviously it's motion, right? It's making a still image to move. Obviously it will have other principles and rules that are regarded. For example, expressions, reactions. So what are the things, what happens when I make a ball to fall down? What happens? What are the key things I'm expected to see as the end result? It's the reaction, it's the expression, and a couple of other stuff that revolves around. That one has its own, but all of them follow the same principles, and which is a key. Also, typefaces, color, for all of them. So it all depends on how seriously do you want to take this. So if you want to start it, one of the first place I would definitely recommend any designer to start is joining a community. And why I'm saying that is because many years ago, a lot of the designers, some of the amazing designers today, like Chris Du and really amazing designers that you see in the space today, they didn't have some of the opportunities that we now currently have. And thanks to blockchain, it has actually even made it more easier, because blockchain came with a different approach to users, and that is community. Because think about it, there are no blockchain projects you see today that doesn't put focus in community. And in the design ecosystem, if you really want to get better at what you are doing, definitely community is one of the fastest way for you to, you know, to start your journey. Because one thing about community, sometimes yes, it can be very daunting, it can be very challenging trying to get the attention of people around the community. But the thing about it is that even when you are there, subconsciously you are learning a lot of things, because some persons will just be dropping a lot of resources, a lot of ideas, concepts, maybe something that they're working on. Some can be doing challenges, and all of these things are things that you, in your subconscious, you're actually learning them, you're seeing them, but you may not even know that you're learning them until you actually start, you know, doing them, right? So community is definitely one place that you want to start from, because some community can get a lot of things that you are looking out for. You can ask questions in most cases. In fact, there are many top design companies like even Adobe, XD and all of that, that have community embedded. Even Figma, they have a community embedded along with their products. So it makes it much more easier for you to say, okay, now I'm designing something on Figma and I cannot have access to something. Maybe I can't work with auto layout. How does auto layout work? There's a community of, you know, in Figma that you can actually just go there, type a small message and say, hey, I have a challenge with this. Can you guys help me on auto layout? What do I need to do? Within a few days or a few hours, someone is definitely going to respond to you. Or even if someone doesn't respond to you, someone might have asked that same question that you would just see the answer to your problem. So community plays a really, really vital role in making designers better, or even any new designers to be better. Then also there are tutorials out there. Udemy, Domestika, a couple of really good, amazing platforms that, you know, Blender community too is there. You can literally use some of all these tools, all these resources to learn how to design, learn the principles, and then begin to understand how design itself is, right? So, and one thing about it is, understand, when you understand the first basics or the principles, you can now understand, okay, what part do I want to go into? Do I want to go into visual design, visual and still graphic design, or do I want to go into product designing? I want to be designing products for people, right? So all of these things are like really cool places where you can. YouTube is also another amazing resource for my journey. When I started doing self-taught myself in design and engineering for about 2-3 years. I think it was my third year when I started actually earning money, like really good money, not the money that, you know, 50-50k or stuff like that. When I started earning really good money, that's when I actually started paying for licenses. Because the truth is, I've always enjoyed paying for licenses. I've always had this concern that how can some of these creators building these things, how are they surviving if they are building all these things for free, right? So I've always wanted to get to a point where I'm earning enough to pay for a license. So immediately I got to the point when I could afford a license, I could buy a pack of icons, I could buy a pack of illustrations, I could pay for my Adobe Creative Suite and stuff like that. I started paying for them. Some of them I didn't even need to use it at the time. I just paid for them, right? Because there's something that comes along paying for these things. It gives you more information, or it also gives you more responsibility as a designer to know why you should be held responsible for, you know, paying for something, right? So all of these things are really like cool way where you can actually, you know, begin, you know, you can start your journey as a designer and even really get better at it.
Yeah. All right, so you talked about community. I think you mentioned that Web3 media also has something similar, communities that can help.
Yeah, yes. So I mean, we do have a community which is actually right now is over at least over 2,000 designers strong. So that's across all of our platforms. So on Twitter, we have over 1,100. On Discord, we have over 1,100, going to 1,200 now. And it's called Designers DAO. So the initial goal for Designers DAO is actually, that was even before we started Web3D. The initial goal why we created Designers DAO was we wanted to create, before we transition fully into a DAO, which is going to be dependent on the decision of the community, right? We're going to make it very open to the community to make that decision eventually, because we are definitely working on other models that would make the community much more engaging, and people are basically going to be really enjoying what they are doing in the community. But before we transition or move into becoming a full DAO, one of the key things we want to do is that we want to get the community to at least 5,000 to maybe 10,000. And in this period, what we just want to focus on is training designers, having the community challenging enough for people to want to, for designers to come in, whether you are a new designer, you are an experienced designer, whatever level you are, come into the community, take up challenges, take up activities that is going on that revolves around designing generally, that's designing for even Web 2, and then designing it for blockchain or for Web 3. We want to make sure that these are the things that we do first before we now move finally into a DAO. And we actually started officially launched Designers DAO in February or March this year. And within the span of like this few months, right, we've had records of a lot of designers that have gotten jobs right from the challenges that they were doing in Designers DAO. Recently, we just got one of our community member who has been really very, very active in the community. He got a job offer of about $2,500 per month, and that is just for probation, right? That's just for the probation period. Now, the offer states that within 3 months after his probation, they will now have to like rethink the amount they're paying him, which obviously is going to be higher, right? And that will be dependent on some of the things that he does for the community. But this could not have been possible if we had not brought it up, or have not started some of these challenges or doing a couple of these activities that we're doing right now in the community. And I think this has always been the vision, right? Myself, the team, we have always had this vision to how can we create not just a product now, how can we create even a free community where people can literally learn design for Web3, and then in the process of learning this stuff, they get filled on job boards, they get opportunities, they get recruiters coming to the community to just pick designers, and then all of these designers that I've gotten. We had another one that had a job in Comzor, and I think the payment for Comzor that I saw when I did some research, it was over like $5,000-$7,000 per month or something like that, right? And we've got like a lot, but for all of this, we've not taken a penny. In fact, we've literally been the ones just, you know, paying for a lot of things in the community to ensure that the growth still continues, but we've not gotten a penny out of it. And that's not our focus. Our focus is how can we really make designers get opportunities, and that I think that's what we're doing with the community right now. So a lot of people are joining. In the past couple of days, we've seen like an influx of people just coming in here and there, and many people are taking the challenges even more seriously now because they know that the vision we're trying to pass to all of them is something that would help them both short and long term.
How different is being a Web2 designer and being a Web3 designer?
Like, okay.
If you're a Web3 designer and want to transition to start building Web3 products or making visual designs for Web3 content, do you like need your kind of training to do that?
No, not at all. Not at all. As a matter of fact, I think you'd be a better Web3 designer if you start first with being a better Web2 designer, to be honest. Reason why I say that is Web3 is obviously very complicated. The reason why it's complicated is because it's been there for over a decade right now. Since 2009, that's when Bitcoin itself and blockchain actually came into play. That's over 10 years ago. Now, even prior to that, blockchain has been recorded before, like not blockchain itself, but cryptography and all of that has been recorded in the past before. But in 2009, that's when obviously it became more into a use case, like transactional and a couple of other things, and Ethereum, all of that came into play. But the thing is, because of how the technology is, right, and when it initially started, it was more developer focused than designer focused. Developers are very straight to the point. All they understand, or most of the things they understand, revolves around hashes, codes, snippets, and a couple of like really ambiguous words that as a normal user, you might not really get acquainted with these words easily, right? And obviously that's where designs come into play. As a matter of fact, for every new technology that have come in, if you look at the history of all the technologies, all the frameworks that have been coming in play, right, you will realize that all of them have always been developer focused, and it makes sense because technology is more developer focused than even more designer. It is when everything is now settled, that's when design will now come in to say, okay, how do we make this much more relatable to humans, right? So that said, it is imperative that as a designer, you should learn what Web2 is. You should understand how Web2 design is, how the traditional systems of design works. And how do you do that? Do more research on healthcare or health tech, right? Do more research on edutech or on fintech. Understand how some of all these applications are built. Understand, for example, you can take cue from Stripe. You can take cue from Paystack. You can take cue from Carrywise, from Piggyvest. you can take cue from a Bamboo, right? You can take cue from a lot of all these applications. The reason why I'm saying you can take cue from them is because obviously these are companies that have last decades, they've last years of experience. They've given a lot of like value to their end users, right? And for example, take Stripe or PayStack, for example, they have recorded millions and tons of users. Now, if you begin to understand how these designs work for some of all these products, right, and why a lot of these users are using this product, you would now understand how can I replicate the experience that these users are having in these traditional applications. How can I replicate it into Web3? And how can I make Web3 better? So that is the only thing you need to do. And obviously, it still boils down to the fact that you need to understand the basics, principles of design. And I have listed that before. So my advice would be that if you want to, and that's one of the things we're doing at Designers DAO, for example, we're not just kind of like throwing all of Web3 design into, we share any resources. So the resources can be a traditional, you know, traditional design system, it can be focused on maybe Web3, but we share any resources, and as long as it is something that would help them to become better Web3 designers. So what the advice I always give to them is, know the principle, the basic principles of design, understand how traditional applications work, understand their end users, and then find a way to replicate that flexibility. Because even in Web2, there's still a few challenges, but they've been able to answer those questions, right? It's almost like just copy the thing that you already seen in Web2, copy it and then bring it to Web3, then find ways to modify it and make it better. And that's what is happening now. So I think that's one of the best things to do as designers.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. And if you have any feedback or comments, please send an email to bolu@techpoint.africa. Thank you, and I'll see you in the next one.